This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, y'all? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out this week. And we're going to kick it off with Catwoman, Lonely City number one from DC Comics by Cliff Chiang. This is his triumphant return to DC Comics with a black label book all about a older Catwoman. This, in essence, feels like Cliff Chiang's Dark Knight Returns, but for Catwoman. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, first off, he's not just doing the art. He also wrote this. Like, this is a
it's a tour de force.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. Like, he's done a lot of amazing things. We've been big fans of a lot of his work, but this is the total package here. This is all Cliff. It's fun to kind of see him get to kind of drive his own thing. And since he is an artist first, like, this being art driven, I think is such a cool idea. And then a great take, I think, on Batman. You know, we talk about, like, Bat-itis or whatever fun pun you did there, Alex.
Batitis.
It's actually called Batigue.
Batigue, yeah. Batigue. But
chronic
this,
Batigue.
This feels fresh and new, and it's a cool take. And the art alone. You know what I mean? I mean, come on, the art alone. But you were saying, Alex? I'm sorry.
I like this a lot, too. It is sort of, the timing's a little odd in that we're getting an older Catwoman over in the Batman Catwoman book that Tom King's doing. Sure. So it feels
Don't
a little
bit
like... Don't
you hold that against Cliff, you fucking asshole.
I'm not holding it against the story.
I like this better.
I agree. I like this better, too. In it, just for clarity's sake,
no other reason. But I also like the fact there's a really smart take in here that all of the villains are older. There's a very fun bit with Killer Croc where he's old man Killer Croc, who's like, he's the guy who sits on the curb playing checkers all day, and he's wearing the same hat and the vest and everything like that. And he's like, my sciatica's acting up. Yeah. Very fun. Just fun also, I think it is hard to pull off in a comic book a character getting old, because they, in your mind, or at least in my mind, they move the same way, because you're watching them, you're looking at them on a still page, you're filling in the movement there. But what Cliff does really ably is he creates a sense that Catwoman is older. Her joints don't work as well. Her knees don't work as well. It is harder for her to do these things while she's still trying to do them. And it's great. And, well, the other thing that I wanted to bring up, it's not just like what's going on in Batman Catwoman. There's also, it's a lot like what's going on in Batman, because there is a police state based on Batman that's being run by Two-Face here, who is now supposed to be a good guy. Yeah. And I also think this is doing a better job than that.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a little more controlled as an idea in this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not knocking it by saying it's like what's happening in the other books. I'm just saying, like, the timing is odd, because I do think this book is more unique and more original in sort of its world building. So I really appreciate it. And the art that Cliff does is, as always.
But also what's nice,
because, you know, he actually he does both the writing and the art here.
And thank you.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that, Pete, as a fan.
But Justin, what's great is when you have an artist kind of leading the way the kind of paneling is, and the when you kind of like open up the book and kind of just look at it first before we start to read, it's really awesome the way it's set up. And there's a lot of great flow and movement to the comic. It makes it easy to read. You can kind of get into the rhythm of it. I was just really, really impressed with this as a tight package, as Justin loves.
You say that. I don't really actually say that. You're the one that says that.
This is a great book. And just so you guys know, I don't think we mentioned this yet, but Cliff Chiang actually does the art, but he also writes it. And I think that's important to note before we wrap up.
How did we miss
it's important. It's as journalists, we have to make sure we cover the bases.
Stop. Yeah. Nita Hawes Nightmare Blog, number one from Image Comics, written by Rodney Barnes and Jason Sean Alexander, art by Patrick Reynolds and Jason Sean Alexander. This is a book where I think the art really leads the way, continuing the pattern from the previous book.
I mean, the art is really good. This book, I like. It felt, I was like, is this an anthology? The way it sort of jumps between the different stories, and then it all becomes one thing, and it's pretty scary.
It's scary as fuck, man. Like, this is a lot.
And Pete, you are scared. You don't like being scared.
No, I do not. There was a bunch of moments where I was just like, nope, and I set this book down. But I did keep going back to it, and that last panel made me jump.
Mm-hmm. For joy?
No. I'm being scared.
Hooray! Again, what I was saying, I was sort of joking about it a little bit, but I really do think the art leads Ray here, because the creatures and the things that are going on are pretty terrifying. And like you were saying, Justin, it's a little hard to hold on to the story sometimes, but I always liked looking at what was going on the page.
That last panel was fucking terrifying.
Scary stuff. Nubia and the Amazons, number one from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Williams and Vita Ayala, art by Aletha Martinez. This is a big kickoff of Trial of the Amazons, the big crossover that's coming to DC next year. Here we're getting a focus on Nubia, as you can figure out from the title, who I believe in this continuity is essentially picking up from Hippolyta now and becoming queen of the Amazons. But we're delving into her backstory, how it affects the present day. I'll tell you what, I'm not usually a huge fan of the Themyscira stuff. It feels like it hits a lot of the same notes. This feels fresh and new to me.
Well, nice. Yeah, and I really like the Well of Souls as that's sort of the focus here. There's a whole new, a bunch of new Amazons are sort of brought into the fold here, which hasn't happened in a long time. And that's cool. There's a little bit of air of mystery around what's happening. I definitely feel like something bad is happening, but I feel like we're going to get some good guys, bad guys coming out of this the Well of Souls in this moment. So, like, a lot of nice stuff is set up here in this issue.
Yeah. Yes, please, more. I think this is great.
I'm sorry.
There it is.
I'm just picturing you going up to the DC offices and being like, yes, please, more. Please. More Nubia and the Amazons, please.
May I have more, please?
Yeah.
More. This is a very good book. On the other hand, Gunslinger Spawn, number one from Image Comics, written by Tom McFarlane.
I know what it's supposed to be. Here's the thing.
Justin,
hold on, you finish. Written by Todd McFarlane, Alice Cott, art by Brett Booth, Thomas Nachlik, Philip Tan, and Kevin Keane. Kick it off of the triumphant kickoff of King Spawn and the new Spawn line of books. We're getting Gunslinger Spawn, and if you don't know who he is, he has a very big hat.
Where do you keep your knives?
This guy's supposed to be this absolute badass. He's like, oh, you don't mess with me, I'll kill you. And he wears the biggest, goofiest hat.
Maybe
I've ever seen.
Like with knives.
Slash from Guns N' Roses.
Like, he looks like Yosemite Spawn.
That's hilarious. And the fact he's like, you want to see something badass, kid? I keep a very long knife in my very tall hat. I'm like, what is this, a magic show? Get out of here, gunslinger.
No, this is great. Plus, Justin always talks about his favorite thing is Spawn.
No.
We're on the last panel. We got it. And it's there.
Oh, that's true.
Countdown is back, baby.
We did get the countdown at the end. I'll tell you what. I opened up, and for the very first page, I was like, I have no idea what's going on here. This is a bunch of nonsense. And then I flipped to the second page, and I was like, oh, this is more nonsense. Okay, this is Spawn. And after King Spawn felt like this fresh new take on the Spawn franchise, reading this, I was like, yes, this is what Spawn is. Thank you. This is correct, I guess. And when we got to the countdown, I was like, cool.
You think Todd McFarlane was like, well, if we're going to do a really good Spawn, I better just put out another bad one, too. Just everyone remembers what Spawn has been for
don't
so long.
Say that.
But, I mean, this book has all the
knives inside.
Why are you saying that? Like, that's a good thing. It has so much posturing and self-seriousness that I feel like that's what I remember Spawn being, and why I was like, I just can't read that. I can't enjoy
the
that.
The scene where he loses it, it's like, what is gas? I mean, just great. I mean, that's just fun.
There's also, like, he's barely a gunslinger, and I barely know what a Spawn is to start off with. And the fact that he's barely a gunslinger is like, this is two things that don't actually map onto anything. But I will say the art is good. I liked a lot of the short stories in the back. I thought they were much stronger than the main story, frankly.
Agreed. The last one, especially, the art was very nice, and it like actually had some gunslinging happening.
Yes. Not a lot of gunslinging coming from Gunslinger Spawn. Come on, man. Let's move on to a surprising sequel.
Just one more thing. One more thing.
Horses don't run out of gas, guys. Gunslinger is living the best life.
I got newsflash. Everyone knows that. And we have our main character being like, what's this contraption for, like, multiple pages?
He's from olden times. He doesn't know what gas is.
I know. Why do we have to have him really dwelling on the difference between a horse and a motorcycle? And I'll tell you what, it takes him the whole day to get it.
I fed a lot of gas to a horse once, and it did not go very far.
You can drag a horse to gas, but you can't make him go 55 miles an hour.
That's what I always say.
The thing is, the hat, he could easily be wearing a cowboy hat. There's nothing stopping that hat from being a cowboy hat. Instead,
it's
the most Abraham Lincolnist hat in the world.
Abraham Lincolnist.
It doesn't make any sense when he is clearly
a
cowboy.
It's a knife hat.
But it's not a knife. Also, he has 50 bullets covered in bullets and guns and knives. He can pull his cape. He can pull stuff out of his cape. Why does he keep a knife in a hat?
You got to have it.
I feel like that was something that he says because he personally likes the hat. And he's like, this hat looks stupid, but I like it. How can I make
I have
it sound cool?
No problem. No problem with Gunslinger Spawn and Medieval Spawn and whatever else all being action figures. That's fine. But bring them to a story and it's nonsense. It just becomes nonsense. I'm sorry. Refrigerator Full of Heads, number one from DC Comics, written by Rio Yoris, art by Tom Fowler. This is kicking off on Bucket Full of Heads, the book by Joe Hill that came out.
Basket.
Sorry about that. Same sort of thing. A basket is like...
Yeah.
Well,
if you're getting water out of a well, Alex, one of those will be better for it and one will be worse.
That's very true. And it's not a refrigerator, I'll tell you what. In this, we are getting a pickup on this axe that keeps heads alive. It goes in the wildest direction possible. And there's a movie I want to reference, a Steven Spielberg movie, but to say it would ruin it. But it goes insane by the end here. I did not know what to think going into this book, but the fact that there's Tom Fowler art is great, and it's a very different feel from the first series, but I like it so far. What do you guys think?
I think that they did a good job in this book of bringing in enough of the elements from the first series. There's like a big, bad, horrible crime that kicks off the series, and we're going to see those criminals, I think, come to this small town and encounter our sort of nice young couple that's just trying to get by. I like that we get to the axe pretty quickly, and then we're just in axe, the wildest version of Axe World. So it heightens from the first series. I like this world a lot. I would continue to read anthology series based around this.
I thought it was creepy, but fun, and really great art.
The Death of Doctor Strange, number two from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Lee Garbett. The cliffhanger in the last issue was that Doctor Strange died, but then he came back. How did he come back? We find out in this issue exactly what was going down, and also find out more about maybe not the people who killed Doctor Strange, but definitely some new, very creepy enemies. Justin, you were talking about this on the live show. Series is very weird, but fun.
Yes, it is weird. It feels like it's bringing in, it feels like a larger event, and I know it's sort of a small event, off to the side of the Marvel Universe, but it feels big. Like, we get all the Avengers in here. The way that they've sort of tricked the Doctor Strange return here on the heels of his death, he has set aside a week of his like life to come back on his death and solve his own murder is just a great premise for anything.
I hope I can do that one day.
Yeah, you're going to need more than a week to solve your murder.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So I would set aside a month. if you could. Because I'll tell you what, when I do it, it's going to be really complicated.
That's what I was going to say. It's not going to be going to take me a month to figure out it was you.
Yeah, but you have to solve it. You can't just point to me and be like, all right, R.I.P., R.I.P. Only Murders in the Podcast. That's the show that
Nice. Pete, what did you think about this book?
I thought it was good. You know, I think it was like a lot of what Justin said. I thought it was definitely tweaked well and put together in a good way. I thought it read well, so I appreciate it.
All right, let's move on and talk about Green Lantern number 7 from DC Comics, written by Jeffrey Thorne, art by Tom Rainey and Marco Santucci. Our front story here is following John Stewart as he goes back in time, and we get yet more information about the Guardians and their origin and how it mixes with the New Gods. And the backstory is all about our lanterns, who aren't exactly lanterns as they get in a bunch of scuffs and fights and things like that. But I'll tell you what, this is great. I was a little iffy about the John Stewart story, but it takes a turn here that is really interesting, I thought. And yeah, I continue to like the Joe Green Lantern story as well. So this is, as I always like to say, a very tight package.
I agree. The John Stewart story was a lot better than the earlier ones and the Joe as well. This is something, though, I just feel like this book is a little strange. Like, I want them to have more space or to be dealing with a larger issue. It feels like this new sort of take on Green Lantern doesn't really have a premise to it. And maybe that's what they're just like, let's just tell some stories featuring our different Green Lanterns however we want to. But I'm sort of missing sort of a larger idea of what's happening.
Pete, what about you? What do you think about this? You're iffy on Green Lantern as always.
Yeah. You know, I thought the backup was better, but it's just tough because you're taking like my favorite new Green Lantern character and trying to fit it into the Green Lantern world, which I didn't like as much. But you know, it's fine if you like Green Lantern.
Fair enough. Let's turn to one of our favorite books here on the podcast, Ice Cream Man, number 26 from Image Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Morazzo. In this issue, you got to turn your comic sideways, buddy. Man.
Or
you're reading
computer.
All about a family tree as the main character climbs all the way to the bottom and tries to figure out where the trauma and addiction in his family comes from. Great issue. Very annoying to read on a laptop, but...
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not in an office where people will be looking at me because I was holding my laptop on its side.
Picking up your entire monitor and holding it, walking around the office trying to...
Yeah. People will be like, Pete, that doesn't look like work. I just think that this is just classic, unbelievable Ice Cream Man. Like, we also got like a lot of characters, like the callback characters in this issue. Just, oh, man, so good. Such a good story.
Yeah, I mean, this book always just, like, finds new ways to tell, like, stressful stories about people dealing with the things that we deal with in our lives while bringing in sort of the larger mythology of an ice cream man that is somehow the devil himself. And I love the way the family tree premise and then just pushing right through it into something else that I thought was super cool.
Yeah, great issue. Definitely pick this one up in print, though, I would say, if you can, because you're going to have a better reading experience. Next up, Nightwing number 85 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Robbie Rodriguez. This issue also flips things on their head a little bit, but in this case, we're getting a Batgirl Barbara Gordon book instead of a Nightwing book. It's told from her perspective. Justin... By the end of the book, there's some smoochy boochies.
They kissing. I mean, I think, who is it that says, is it Robin?
I think it's right Tim,
Tim, he's like, finally. I'm like, yes, Tim, we agree. It's just, this book is so good right now. It's telling stories with Nightwing and bringing in all the relationships that Dick Grayson has that are important in. It's just great. They both get hit with the fear toxin, and their greatest fear is losing each other. Instant kiss. Beautiful.
I have a question. I feel like I missed an issue of Fear State somewhere, because who is this Seer person? Because I thought Scarecrow took over the Oracle network, and so Scarecrow was pretending to be Oracle, but I clearly missed something somewhere, because now we have this new villain named Seer who is also doing the same thing.
Well, I don't think Scarecrow took over. Someone took over, and now we've revealed that it's this character, Seer.
Okay, okay.
And that was because there's this issue, and then there's the backup in Batman, which is called Batgirls, mm-hmm. That we'll probably talk about in a minute, that is sort of telling two little portions of this story. I like it. I like Oracle just wrecking shop and maybe entering the Batgirl fray yet again.
Yep. Pete?
Yeah, I agree. It's super touching. So it was kind of nice to get to that moment. Great art.
Next up, Thor number 18 from Marvel, written by Donny Cates, art by Pascal Ferry and Bob Finn. In this issue, Thor goes to the only person who can help him with his Mjolnir problem, and yes. That, of course, is Throg. And Throg has no choice but to assemble the Pet Avengers. Great stuff.
They are just called the Avengers.
Oh, yes, Alex. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
Yeah. I apologize. Still, great stuff. Love the Throg here. Very fun Throg in this issue. It takes a big problem and makes it kind of ridiculous but fun at the same time. Good book.
Well, I love how Throg's a badass. He's like, listen, I started this project 4 days ago before you even came to me. That's kind of, I'm a very forward-thinking frog. All the power of Kermit the Frog and organizational skills, mm-hmm. with the power of a little chip of Uru that he's built into a tiny hammer.
Pete, you pumped your fist in celebration over this.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We're taking the, you know, we got teased in the Marvel show with Throg, and now we're just cashing in on that kind of tease there. And I think it's just so great and needed. You know what I mean? Like, enough of this Thor guy. Like, really, let's get to the real hero.
I like that Throg. He has to get into the tiny frog house. But here's Throg. I see it a little bit. Shouldn't his name be Thorg?
Oh, don't be that guy.
No, it's Frog. Throg.
Yeah, I know, but it just doesn't sound
Thog? Right. There should be no
That would make now. More sense. Yeah. Yes.
It's not as fun.
That's why I think Thorg is better.
It's not.
I don't know.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader in Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
I don't know. Great question. Batman number 115 from DC Comics, written by James Todd IV, Becky Cloonan, and Michael W. Conrad. Art by Bengal and Jorge Jimenez and Jorge Corona. The front story, the backstory, as we always mentioned, is the beginning of this Batgirls crossover, mini story, whatever it is, tying into Fear State. But the front, we're getting Batman and Miracle Molly trying to fight back against Scarecrow, while a bunch of other stuff is going on with Ivy and the Magistrate and Simon Saint. Lots of stuff going on in the crossover now. This feels like, I'll say to make Pete not upset, a very much a middle chapter. But yeah, lots of stuff going on. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just okay with this crossover at this point.
Yeah, do you not like it?
I don't know. There's something about it that felt very focused, and I think it was just this week that adding in Seer and the stuff with Simon Sade focusing on Ivy and Scarecrow off doing all this stuff, there's too many things going on, and it's starting to feel a little unfocused. I feel confident giving the storytellers involved that it's going to come back to the central point, and it's going to come back to Batman versus Scarecrow, and we're ultimately going to see what the plan is there, so that's fine. But right now, I'm not sure what it's about. And again, yeah, that's just this week.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, just this issue was a little bit of a letdown because we spent so much time with Saint. I did like the Molly stuff. I thought that was cool. But I feel
she's
like
cool.
Yeah, I think we're going to get some more great things to come.
I like this issue a lot. I think this is a big story that I feel like is very meticulously planned out. And I really like the way Scarecrow is sort of building this peacekeeper character in a cool way, in a scary way. And the Ivy stuff, I like that as well. It does feel like sort of two things happening at once, but I do think they are going to become important to each other. And the art in this issue I thought was beautiful. There's page 13, I think, with Batman shooting a grappling hook and Miracle Molly on her fan platform or whatever. Yeah, it's just such a cool shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I assume the plan here is Scarecrow put Simon Saint in a position where he would find out about Ivy, that would push Ivy too hard so that she'll bring down all of Gotham City, and that ultimately will be the climactic event that causes his fear state, that causes the evolution of Gotham City the way he wants it. But again, I feel like we're in the middle chapter there, and we either need to see something like that happen or whatever the plan has come together. But let's move on to something else. Made in Korea, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Jeremy Holt, art by George Schall. This is one of the best, one of the most upsetting books on the stand right now, about a young AI who is learning violence, learning hatred, but also grappling with gender identity in this issue. The AI creature, robot, whatever you want to call her, is taken back to Korea in this issue by her maker and discovering things there. Things go very poorly, but I love the discussion of like being trapped in your own body and what that means and what it means if you want a different body, that they deal with in a relatively subtle and understated way here that I thought was so smart.
Yeah, this book I feel like is just bringing in so many ideas in like a very subtle way. I think we get to enjoy the dread of like what can happen with this this AI over the course of like the few scenes we get here. It's really good. One of the most unique books out there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's doing a lot of great things smartly, which is nice. It's dealing with a lot of different issues, and the art is unbelievable. The storytelling is great. It's very moving, I've been impressed with the choices that it's making. It's one of my, when we get it in the stack, I always really look forward to what's going to be in there, because each issue has been really surprising and interesting.
Next up, Batman versus Bigby, A Wolf in Gotham, number 2, from DC Comics, written by Bill Willingham, art by Brian Level. In this issue, Batman and Bigby finally meet face-to-face. They kind of fought a little bit the last issue, but here they're more on even keel. We get a little more information about where Bigby is in his life, presumably since Fables. I'll tell you what. I like this story. I think Bill Willingham, not surprisingly, is doing a better job writing Bigby than Batman, and has ultimately kind of depowered Batman a little bit to make Bigby have the upper hand.
What do you mean depowered Batman?
I mean, like, made Batman like a step or two behind.
Well, he's dealing with a storybook character. So I think Batman's maybe not on top of that from the jump. Exactly. I don't blame Batman
for every eventuality. Oh, I know what you are. You're the big bad wolf.
Oh, you're clearly the big bad wolf. Okay.
But I will say, I think just Bigby is very powerful. Like, wrecks the Batcave. I've never seen the Batcave wrecked like this.
Yeah, that was
crazy.
In any Batman
story, which is cool. And it's funny, I feel like this is like the opposite of what you're getting in the main Batman book, Alex, where it's like wildly complicated and convoluted. This is sort of like very different a Batman story, a very different Batman story just coming through. We get all this Robin stuff, Egg, like all these like big, weird Batman world ideas that I think are really fun. And I'm curious, it's weird that this is like the big confrontation between Batman and Bigby. And then they're like, well, we're not going to fight now. And it's like, well, now you have to work together now. What, you're going to fight later?
Yeah. Let's work together and then fight.
Yeah.
Is the pattern that we're going to go through.
Yeah. No, that's what it's just an, no, that was yeah. sort of an odd. I like how Bigby's like, I can smell you. And Batman later is like, I can smell you.
This is what I'm saying. He makes
Batman kind of, doesn't have the power to smell.
I know. I'm saying he makes Batman kind of dumb. Like he's, I don't know. Pete?
Wow.
All right. So I'm very much enjoying the continuation of this kind of start. I think that they're making from the first issue to the second issue. I'm enjoying like the arc of this and how it's going, because sometimes like in between issues, it can get a little kind of like, well, what's going on? So I'm appreciating that. And also like art is just phenomenal. And, you know, Willingham, he knows how to write, so I'm enjoying it.
I feel like, Alex, Batman's your dad, and you saw him, like, get yelled at work, and you're like, my dad was not very powerful at work today when I saw him. He couldn't do the papers like he usually does.
Who was that man who was mean to my dad?
I thought my dad was... It's the Big Bad Wolf, it's the Big Bad Wolf.
No, my dad is the strongest... guy.
I thought my dad was the most powerful.
No, my dad is the strongest guy, so that guy must be the Big Bad Wolf. That's the only way that'll work. The United States of Captain America, number 5 from Marvel, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Dale Eaglesham. This is finishing up this title, as it turns out, as Captain America is what we established in the book. All take on the big bad of the series. The standout here for me is Dale Eaglesham's art, who is just perfect to draw Captain America. Great stuff.
Great to see Bucky in the Cap uniform again here, which I thought, I was like, ah, man, it really took me back to when Bucky was Cap and how fun that was.
Yeah.
And boy, do you get a lot of captains here.
It's almost too much Captain. I'm over captained with this. I did like the Bucky stuff.
Would you say you were over-captainated?
I was.
Yeah. Captain Crunch America, Captain Morgan America pops in for a quick minute.
Anyway, this is a good title. I'm very interested to see they plug that there's going to be a Captain America Iron Man team-up book coming next, which I don't think I've ever seen before. So,
It very much feels like Marvel's World's Finest, which is cool. I'm down for that. But it also made it feel like this is the main Cap book.
Yeah.
If you want to read Cap, you have to read this Cap and Iron Man book. So
weird stuff. Speaking of team-ups, let's talk about Batman Catwoman number 8 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Liam Sharp. This is continuing a lot of stuff happening.
What? Ooh. Dude, what?
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell you what. I know I've said this a couple of times and I don't want to repeat myself, but I feel like the dreamlike quality of what's happening here as we jump through multiple timelines is a little hard to follow. But as bummed as I was that they were in keeping with Clay Mann, because it felt like it was Tom King and Clay Mann together, Liam Sharp is better. Like, the Liam Sharp issues, the last one and this one, are much easier to follow, much more direct. I still don't know what the Phantasm is doing here or how the Phantasm is exactly involved in that story, but very good. Just really, really good art in this issue.
I thought this was really intense. I love the talking out the relationship here while fighting on rooftops and alleyways. Just classic Cat and Bat stuff here. I was happy to see kind of Catwoman put it out there for Batman, you know, like have him hear his shit, you know, and deal with it. So, I really have been loving this kind of story, and Tom King is killing it. So I can't wait for more.
I think with some of Tom King's stuff, because I across the board sort of like, and I like the way there's
just
a lot
like,
of
you just like across the board. Just you kind of like it.
No, I like it a lot.
Okay, well then say that. Don't just say across the board. It's
Oh, the like police are here. I hope I'm being arrested by the like police. But I think in this book, because of the multiple timelines, it's starting to feel like all the Batman and Catwoman stuff on the roof talking about the relationship. I'm like, we've been doing this for a million years. When if you did it sort of all at once, then we could do it and then move on to the next thing. And I get the idea of...
We don't want to move on. We want to
but
stay here.
But I want to move on to a different type of storytelling, I think, because I think this is like, I get the juxtaposition, but to Alex's point, we've sort of lost a little bit about what each thread is sort of... The thrust of each thread, it just feels like we're seeing different things happening at different times to slightly different people. So I agree, it's starting to lose a little bit of its cohesion. But to the Liam Sharp art makes this feel like a book from like the 80s, like early Sandman almost. And it's adding this whole level of dread to it that is really cool.
Yes. That is exactly what I've been hooking into about it. And my thought while reading this issue was like, oh, this is like a Vertigo book. This is like reading a dreamlike, weird Vertigo book versus a DC comic book from the modern era. And that just made it crisp in so much more, because I started to feel like if I had read this as a Vertigo book in the 80s or the 90s or something like that, I'd be like, cool. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I'm in for the ride. But because it is a modern DC comic book by Tom King and Clay Mann, that has been a barrier for me in a certain way. And I know that's a psychological thing about me, but you're absolutely right. I do think there's that context there is important. And again, that's why I think Liam Sharp, even though I like Clay Mann's art, I think Liam Sharp is actually better for this book than Clay Mann was.
You don't like put down one artist like that. You know? Come on, dude.
I'm not. Like I said, I think Clay Mann is really good and draws amazing characters. But
I think just to what I was saying earlier, it made more sense if there was sort of a clean break and it was like Clay Mann finished that part of it and now we're moving into Liam Sharp deliberately. But now we're like, because it's all these different time periods that we're seeing more of, it does feel like sort of a big change. Because I really like the Clay Mann stuff. I really like this stuff. But it makes the story just less continuity for the whole piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on, though, and talk about King Spawn, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Javi Fernandez. This is the Spawn that does not wear a ridiculously tall hat. He wears no hat, in fact, and he is investigating a superpowered serial killer. It ends in a very gross, very terrifying fight by the end of the issue. This continues to be awesome, and this is everything that I wanted of a Spawn book.
Yeah, this is a fun, dark, like exploring the idea of Spawn's enemy being himself and his expectations from like the people of hell and the heaven and all that. I will say, reading this, I was like, oh, right, his cape, it can grab stuff.
And I'm cape is its own kind of character, man.
And I think reading this after reading the Gunslinger book, I was like a little like, oh, yeah, this is so weird and like sort of has a lot of venom. Like they even use the word symbiote here. And I was like, Todd McFarlane doing Venom and all that. I was just like, oh, this whole thing started in such a weird magic cape way that I don't think is
not
cool.
Wait, are you saying
anymore.
The cape pulled you out of it?
I just don't like the cape being, it's very like Doctor Strange. Tone feels off. This book is dealing with serious stuff.
The chains.
The chains are cool. Chains are badass.
Thank you.
Everybody likes chains. But this book is great. Definitely pick this up. Next up, Catwoman.
Well, I just wanted to say, this is, as the one Spawn fan on this fucking podcast, this is, you know, it's nice that you guys are enjoying some Spawn. But yeah, I mean, just creatively and like having kind of like a different art direction for Spawn and the creepy kid in the circle was really freaking me out. But I'm just really impressed with this and it's continues to live up to its title.
Mm-hmm. Catwoman number 36 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Nina Vakuva and Laura Braga. This is another Fear State tie-in here. Similar feelings to the other ones. There's just a lot of stuff going on, even though, generally speaking, I like this Catwoman book. What did you guys think?
I really love the kind of team-up we got to see in this. It was great to see Kat and Harley together. We don't normally see those two together. And Harley's line was hysterical. Like, I want to be her when I grow up. Just really just great. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's fun. This definitely feels like it's in its whole other part of this whole deal. Except for all the Ivy's. Ivy's still part of it. It is a little sprawling across the board. But I like the way the characters are in the Catwoman book now, so I'm excited to see them outside of Fear State.
Eat the Rich, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Pius Bach. In this issue, we're continuing the story of this woman who visits her boyfriend's rich family. Turns out they eat the help when they get old enough. And we find out a lot more about the mythology here and exactly what's going on by the end. There's certainly a weird magic thing involved here that I won't necessarily spoil, but this builds and continues to get better every issue. I'm really enjoying this quite a bit, as dark as it is. What about you guys?
I agree. I really like this book. I like the way the art is sort of taking some fun twists and turns. There's these great panels where when a big thing happens, we get usually the main character's thoughts in big block letters, sort of looking like a classic newsprint, like woman in trouble from like the 1950s. It's got a good vibe. And it is, like you're saying, Alex, taking a bunch of different little twists and turns that I definitely did not expect, and telling the story quickly, like getting through to the really interesting stuff. Really great read.
Yeah, I think it's really fucked up. And I really hope
you mean are you talking about cannibalism in general?
No, I'm talking about the evil rich assholes in this comic.
Oh, because it's okay to eat people if you're gonna gain their power.
No, it's not okay for that.
All right.
I'm
working for me so far.
Now I'm just reading this comic to watch all these rich assholes die because it's fucking not cool to root for.
I don't know. It is called Eat the Rich, but I'm not quite sure what direction it's going in.
Yeah, we'll see.
Instead, I guess we will see. Let's put some money down on it.
Pius Box art is absolutely fantastic as well. Let's move on and talk about another one where the art is amazing. Black Manta, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Chuck Brown, art by Valentin Delandro. Gotta be honest, I don't exactly know what's going on in this book. There's a lot of different things in a lot of different places, but the art is fantastic throughout. Absolutely fantastic. Pete, you seem to love this, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is so cool. Really love the idea that we're kind of expressing here of Black Manta, him not, you know, being more complicated than just the villain that he's kind of labeled to be. So really love that. The art's unbelievable. There's got some real heart in this story. I think it's really well done. I'm really enjoying this series. The first issue is great. The second issue is even better. I'm hooked.
I love the use of the gentleman ghost in this issue. Agree with everything that's been said. The art is really good. And he's using different corners of the DC universe in fun ways. There's a piece of this is something called orichalcum, which is like this Atlantean metal. And I was like, where do I know that from? And then I was like, I spent weeks playing the Indiana Jones like Mac computer game when I was like in high school, and the part of it is like gathering these little pellets of orichalcum, and you have to like put them in all these little different holes in this Atlantis ruins thing. It was so hard, and I was traumatized by that.
Wow.
Exciting stuff. That Texas Blood, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Chris Gondin, art by Jacob Phillips. Our second arc is heating up here as the main character remembers the time he took down a satanic cult. Oh, it gets very intense in this issue, which I was surprised about.
This book is fun. This is one of my favorite reads of the week. It's a fun, like, this
is book. Fun?
The story's exciting.
Kids with guns is fun. These satanic cults that's like...
I wish more kids had guns. Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, my God. What?
The main characters are really well done. And their relationship, which, you know, we've only known the second character. I forget his name off the top of my head. But, like, we've only known him for like 3 issues, and it's great. I want to see more. And then the back matter, they talk about having a spinoff of just him sort of going around chasing up weird occult stories. I'm here for it.
It's good stuff. Last but not least, Maw, number 2 from Boob Studios, written by Jude Ellison S. Doyle and art by A.L. Kaplan. We were a little, iffy is the wrong word, but confused perhaps about the first issue, even though the art was good, as this woman maybe heads to some sort of magical commune. It wasn't totally clear, but we get a little bit more clarity this issue, as well as some absolutely insane things that happen towards the end here. I'm in it personally with this issue. I still don't know exactly what's going on, but everything is intriguing enough that I'm curious to follow it into issue 3.
I agree with that. Like the sort of maybe not twist at the end, but what happens at the end, I was like, oh, didn't see this coming. Yeah. This is a whole new thing. And I have some questions about it, and I'm assuming they'll be answered next issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still a little bit in the dark on this, but like, art's unbelievable. This is creepy as fuck. I'm not sure who I'm rooting for or what's going on, but it's interesting. It's very interesting. Absolutely. I did not, there was no way I could have predicted the end of this. So, I mean, the originality points are off the charts.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
We sure do.
Podcast at YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the... I just said that, didn't I? At Comic Book Live.
At Twitter. You stopped yourself.
It's important to get it out there. I got to get the news.
ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
Yeah. Oh, we should say that Cliff Chang does both. He both writes and draws the issue. I just want to get that
pretty
in.
Pretty amazing.
Thanks for remembering that.